Welcome to episode 201 of The Lab, Beyond the Neuron. I'm Brad Barton.
Yeah, I'm Phil Barton.
There are some links with more information available on the show page today, which you can find by visiting thelabwithbrad.com.
Oh, fancy including a title.
I know, I have a title. I'm actually not sure, but I think it might be the first time I know what the title is before recording. Because usually I come up with it as I'm posting the thing, or, you know, we'll say something that I think is funny, and it turns into the title.
What if the title changes?
Well, then the title will be different, and people will be confused. Speaking of confusion, chocolate. The last episode, I just sort of left that story hanging. It never landed. I was trying to agree with my co-host.
About chocolate.
We were talking about local minimums, right? Good enough answers.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And you were making the point that what looks like a local minimum in one context may not be in another.
Oh, what a smart guy.
Yeah, you're a smart guy. It's kind of the classical thing about local minimums anyway, especially like you're a programmer.
Yeah.
You know all those tools?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't. There's so many tools that would make my life so much better, but I would have to devote time to learning how to use them. And that's how you can get stuck in a local minimum, because before it gets better, it would have to get worse.
Yeah. Learning curves and all that. You're trying to finish a problem, and if you're going to devote a year to it.
I could spend 2 months learning this debugging tool and never turn in this homework assignment.
Right? Yeah. Or I can just get it done with a
whole lot of system.out, right? Yeah.
Yeah. I like system.out.
I use it all the time. We were talking about robots taking over the world
last time.
And
I'm for it.
Talking about the difficulty in trying to make a human equivalent or superior intelligence. One of the things I didn't mention is that the simulations of neurons that we use in neural networks, artificial neural networks, are very simplified as compared to the real thing. The real nothing. The real neuron, the real thing.
I was going to let it go.
Well, the real panelist talking.
Had millions of years to make itself as complicated
True
as
enough.
Possible.
Saw a factoid floated by a panelist on a talk. There's a link to that talk today. She said that a single neuron is probably the equivalent of a laptop as far as complexity and processing power.
Oof.
And if you watch that video, there's an animation and she kind of goes through some of the details and complexity of the brain. And yeah, you bet, between the dendrites and dendritic spines and synapses and various ion channels and organelles and protein synthesis, all that stuff.
Stuff.
One neuron is a very complicated beast, but sometimes a simple simulation of a complicated system will capture what you're interested in simulating. People are complicated, right?
Right.
But with fairly simple software, you can model the way they behave in crowds.
Okay.
Yeah, I do it all the time for designing areas and looking at how emergencies might play out.
Right. Fire exits and stuff.
Yeah, so okay, keep that in mind because things are about to get more complicated.
I've only got a half grip on what's going on right now.
You got half a grip? I barely got a toenail on this.
Okay.
In 1955, a distinguished gentleman of note passed away.
Mm-hmm.
According to his wishes, his family had him cremated and his ashes were scattered in secret.
Ah.
And the reason for that is that this particular gentleman was concerned that people might start passing around body parts as macabre mementos or setting up bits of him to be venerated.
Weird.
Yeah. The practicing pathologist, after figuring out the cause of death, stole his brain.
So it was a legitimate concern.
It was a legitimate concern. The person in question was Albert Einstein.
Oh.
Yeah, it all suddenly makes sense. His pathologist, Thomas Harvey, Tom, stole his brain and his eyes for some reason.
Oh.
And it kind of disappeared for the next 23 years or so, until some reporter and people working on a documentary went, well, I wonder whatever happened to Einstein's brain. And it turned out old Thomas had been holding on to it that whole time. In 1985, he did send some samples of Einstein's brain to a neuroanatomist who was working on the cellular basis of genius.
Okay.
What she discovered, her name was Susan something. Hang on, let me look at my notes. Ah, not Susan something. Marion Diamond, in 1985, looked at a bit of Einstein's brain associated with mathematics and spatial reasoning.
Oh, goodness.
There was no difference in the number, the type, or size of the neurons.
Well, that's a surprise.
However, there were more glial cells than usual.
Oh, those things.
Those things. As if the brain weren't complicated enough, we have an entire set of other cells in their own network to deal with.
Yeah, I only heard about those through this show.
Yeah, well, they've been ignored for a long time. Everybody was so focused on the neuron that they didn't notice there were these other cells and that they seemed to be contributing to the way the brain works. And not just as support cells, they seem to be doing some information processing of their own.
Okay. So
let's run through a few types of glial cells, shall we?
Okay, let's do that.
I'm not sure how to pronounce this, so epidemial?
Sounds good to me. Yeah, we'll run with it.
Okay. Those cells line your spinal cord and the inside of the ventricles. Ventricles are fluid-filled cavities in your brain, empty spaces. I know there's at least three because the thalamus sits along either side of the third ventricle. I think there's more.
Big old holes in your brain for some reason. Well,
the epidermal cells create the cerebrospinal fluid or cerebral fluid.
Okay.
They also absorb it, so they help regulate how much of that you have. They've also got cilia that they wave rhythmically in order to circulate the stuff.
Oh.
Kind of started with them because they are nice and simple.
Okay.
Now we move on to microglia.
Okay.
Microglia are the immune system of the brain. Actually, all the glia help fight infection and do repair. But these are the mobile ones. They patrol your brain, and they have very complicated little machines. They have something like 6 different forms they can take on, depending upon what job they're doing.
Okay.
Yeah, they're like little transformers. They first appear in the yolk sac while you're still an embryo, and then they migrate into the brain where they live. Anytime they sense something wrong or something they have to do, they divide. Unlike neurons, they can divide all they want. Keep that population up. And very complicated machines. But as far as figuring out the algorithm of intelligence, the way the mind works, you may be able to capture them with some fairly simple tricks. Like the way they patrol. What they do is easy to capture in a simulation. They just avoid each other.
That's their whole mission.
They keep as much distance from each other as they can tell. They have sensors and a chemical they put out. If they sense a lot of that chemical on one end of their body, they will swim away from it. And that spreads them out evenly throughout the brain.
Little antisocial cells.
Yeah, I don't like you.
I don't like any of you.
That would be all well and good, except it turns out they have recent findings that sometimes they will engulf and unplug synapses.
Weird.
Yeah, so whatever algorithm is going on that determines whether or not a synapse is strengthened, weakened, grown, or removed, it's not just the neurons. These little microglia are in on it, too.
Okay.
Yeah. Now we move on to the Oligodendrocyte. This is my favorite just because of the word.
It's fun.
This is an invention of vertebrates, critters with a spine.
Okay.
We have myelin, sort of a fatty lipid that we wrap around the long tail of our neurons, the axon, in order to speed the transmission.
Isn't that associated with Alzheimer's? Losing it?
Actually, it's associated with a lot of different neural pathologies. And, you know, didn't we decide we weren't going to talk about what can go wrong because it's complicated?
We're complicated enough. Yeah. Okay. What was it?
Oligodendrocytes. Swan cells do the same thing in your peripheral nervous system. They wrap around one axon. Okay. Oligodendrocytes will wrap around multiple axons. Then we have the astrocytes.
Okay.
Astro, as in star, because they are star-shaped.
Oh, yeah. You know, when it really comes down to it, a lot of these names are not that creative.
Red cell. Oh, it's from the blood. Red blood cell.
Oh, we got it now.
There are fancier names for those. I don't know them off the top of my head. Corpuscles.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever. Wrong liquid. Anyway, there's no blood in the brain. There is blood in the brain, but it doesn't directly touch the neurons. They have something called the blood-brain barrier to help keep poisons and pathogens at bay. And speaking of the microglia, most of the time your immune system will get its cells, the ones that travel around and transform and kill pathogens, from your bone marrow. It looks like microglia make it into the cranial vault and then just live there. So they never have to cross that blood-brain barrier. There are exceptions. Sometimes things will, as some cells will. But, you know, you get the general idea. Mm-hmm. But moving on to astrocytes. These things have these arms that grow out and engulf synapses.
For reasons.
There's a guy who's big in the research on this. I saw him in a couple of places. In one show, he said they can a single astrocyte can engulf up to, 100,000 synapses. In another one, he said 2 million.
Well, is he changing his mind?
I don't know if the research progressed further or if he just misspoke or what's going on there. But a lot.
Yeah. He just picks a big number and runs with it.
But these things are complicated. Every synapse has an associated astrocyte. So it's not just the pre-neuron that sends the signal and the post-synaptic neuron that gets it. They're starting to call it a tripartite synapse. Post, pre, and astrocyte. Because the astrocytes have been implicated in what they call long-term potentiation. It's how you learn. Yeah, so when you're trying to simplify something to model it, you have to be careful not to go from simplified to simplistic, meaning that you left off important details.
Yeah.
And there were some algorithms early in the artificial neural network time, talking late 40s, early 50s, that people thought they shouldn't go and use because it would require communication from a downstream neuron to an upstream neuron. Neurons are one-way message senders. And they're like, okay, that's not biologically relevant.
Okay.
So two things about that. First off, let's not be limited by biology.
Right?
Secondly, it turns out that these astrocytes are perfectly positioned to implement just about any learning algorithm you want.
Okay.
So they could have followed that, and, well, they did, right? Like I said, let's not be limited by biology. They said the same thing.
Good for them.
There is some interesting, this gets a little creepy. They did some experiments. Specifically, human astrocytes are huge. Uh-huh. About 20 times bigger than the ones you find in rats and mice.
Okay.
So they took some astrocytes and they put them in mice.
Okay.
And they put them in the mouse brain. And they found that the mice's emotional and behavioral responses seemed the same. But with various little mousy tests, they learned faster and remembered longer.
Okay. We'll put human bits into mice.
Oh, well, yeah. That's creepy.
It's a hobby of ours.
So there is the other brain, the shadow brain, that we've just barely begun to scratch the surface of. And I hope they can find some relatively simple ways of modeling what the astrocytes and oligodendrocytes and microglia and others do. What I'm curious about, though, is how we know what we know or what we think we know about the brain.
Okay.
So, starting next week.
Oh, that's where we're going.
That's where we're going. I did the same thing when we were looking at natural history and the history of evolution. Took some time off to look at fossils and fossil gathering and the techniques they use to figure out what they have figured out. We're going to do the same thing with the brain, and we'll start that next time. See you then.
Bye.